still.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to convene the April 2nd, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We are convened. Good morning to each of you. Thank you for your patience here. We're a couple of minutes behind. We have had problems here of recent trying to get through the work sessions. I've had them scheduled at the end of the meeting. I'm gonna plow through a couple of bills here first and get those onto the House floor. Folks are eagerly awaiting them, so we're going to do that. But committee members, I would just like to briefly report on the task force, or rather the work group on pesticides last night. And I want you to know that we agreed to item number one. There was a general agreement that we would request the Department of Agriculture to maintain a list of pesticides that are restricted and or banned. We are, in terms of notification, advance notification for the application of pesticides, the group agreed that the Department of Forestry has a system called FERN, which is the Forest Activity Electronic Reporting and Notification System, FERN, and apparently I know virtually nothing about it. There are some folks that are quite familiar with it. There was general agreement in the meeting last night that that is a system that's worthy of a presentation to the work group to see if any of it was applicable to what the work group is interested in. The third item that we were looking at last night was reporting. And folks wanted to, we kind of put that in the parking lot until we had the report on FERN. So notification up front, reporting on the back end, and they just wanted to wait on that. The next meeting will be Monday evening. And to avoid a quorum, we will be able to have two members from each party, and the vice chairs are going to be coordinating. If you're interested in attending, please coordinate through them. With that, I am going to, unless there's any questions on that.
Would you go over the what the acronym is for again, FERN?
FERN stands for Forest Activity Electronic, Forest Activity Electronic Reporting and Notification System.
Okay.
It's a mouthful, FERN. All right, with that, anything further? All right, thank you, committee members. And again, please check in with the vice chairs if you're interested in attending. It was a fairly good session last night. I'm going to open the work session. Chuck, do we want to handle 2474 first?
Yeah.
Okay.
We can go right down the line.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2474. Okay, Mr. Gallagher, can you remind us what this bill's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2474 would prohibit veterinary facilities from offering services related to veterinary medicine, surgery, or dentistry unless the facility registered with the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board and designated a licensed veterinarian to ensure the facility is in compliance with rules adopted by the board. There were two amendments that we are looking at today. One is the -1 amendment, which modified the definition of veterinary facility, and the -4 amendment created a Oregon State Medical Examining Board Rules Committee and established membership for the committee. And Mr. Chair, Lori Macklin in from the Medical Examining Board is here if you have any questions on the process or the amendments.
Appreciate that very much. Are we aware of any difficulties with either of the amendments from members of the public?
I am not aware of.
Okay. That is my understanding as well. Committee members, before we move to a motion, are folks generally okay with moving forward? Very good. I'm going to recognize then Vice Chair Krieger.
Chairman, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 1/27/15 and the Dash 4 amendments dated 3/23/15.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves, excuse me, yes, Vice Chair Krieger moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated January 27, 2015, and the Dash 4 amendments dated March 23, 2015. Is for House Bill 2474, is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, hearing none, again, Vice Chair Krieger.
Chair, would I move House Bill 2474 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation?
Thank you. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 2474 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on this motion? Seeing none, hearing none. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moreno.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Whitsett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McClain.
Aye.
Chair Whip.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Is there a is there someone on the committee that would like to carry this bill on the floor?
I'd volunteer.
Representative Gorsuch, thank you very much.
Sure. I'll ask him questions.
Very good.
Okay, good.
Question right. of the carrier. But,
and don't tell me ahead of time because I want to do this on my feet.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gorsuch. We appreciate that very much. Going to close the work session on House Bill 2474. And about 10 more pieces of paper up here, and I'd know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2687. Again, Mr. Gallagher, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2687 would exempt a person operating a registered farm vehicle from the laws prohibiting carrying a dog on the external part of that vehicle. There was an amendment proposed, the Dash 2 amendment, and that amendment replaces general guidance for securing a dog carried on the outside of a vehicle with specific guidance and adds that a person is exempt from the prohibition against carrying a dog on the external part of the vehicle if a person is engaged in commercial agriculture.
All right, very good. You've heard it here first in the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee. Bear with me here, committee members, while I'm shuffling papers. I apologize. Okay, that's helpful. Now, in terms of these amendments, Mr. Gallagher, are we again? My understanding is we the general public is at ease with these amendments.
I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
There is no heartburn. Peace and per capita is spread across the landscape. Mr. Barreto.
I don't know whether I should say something now or whether it comes to discussion, but I did have some issues with this bill.
If okay.
I'm not the general public. But
okay. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And if you
should I speak now on it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah, I am from basically the ranch and the rodeo district over in northeastern Oregon, and we have a lot of people that enjoy carrying their dogs in the back of their pickups or on flatbeds. The amendment speaks only to farm trucks with farm plates. Mm-hmm. However, that's a very small number to the people that do carry dogs. And the other thing is, in the hearings, I didn't remember any statistics, you know, as far as to adopt a bill like this, you know, what the statistics were as far as the number of dogs that fall out or jump out of moving vehicles. I've been over in LeGrand for 26 years, and I have not seen any. I've seen a lot of dogs in rigs. I've never seen one jump out.
Okay.
However, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. The other thing is... you know, it's interesting that we can subject ourselves to all kinds of risks in extreme sports these days, and yet we make laws to protect our animals. And that isn't that I am inhumane at all. It's just that I'm trying to get a balance here.
Uh-huh.
And then I have to look at where this bill goes from here, because it seems like there's a progression. Once you get to this point, then the next thing is here and here and here, and there's no end to the, you know, pretty soon they're just going to be allowed in cabs. So that's where I'm at. I wrote a letter, and distributed it out to all the committee members yesterday, and so I will be a no vote on this if it comes to that.
Okay, Ms. Barrero, do you think that this is there are some issues here that could be resolved in a relatively short period of time to address your concerns or not?
Well, I could certainly make an amendment to it, but I see the whole bill. You know, one of the things we talked about at the beginning of this session, and I'm new to this process,
sure,
you know, was on the legislative drafts we do, we have what is the problem, what is the solution. And so the problem I haven't really heard defined, you know, as there are this many accidents every year, this happens, this is a problem we have in our society or in Oregon. So
okay,
that I think would be a good part to define right off the bat.
Okay. Vice Chair McLean, did you have anything additional to add?
Well, I received the letter yesterday, and really and truly, I feel like there are some issues that are there that he has a right to, you know,
okay,
to really look at.
Very good.
And I agree with him. I think there are a lot of people, not just in Eastern Oregon, that have their dogs in the back of the trucks. Mm-hmm. And these are dogs that are going from one farm to another sometimes. And some of them are shepherds that are helping with sheep and other
cattle
items. But they're not always on a truck that says farm. And they're not always necessarily on an off-road because they have to get from farm to farm.
Okay.
So I do think there's some issues that could be looked at. And I was really appreciative of Representative Barreto's letter.
Thank you for doing that, Representative Barreto. And true confessions from the chair here. I was so wrapped up in pesticides yesterday that I did not get an opportunity to review that. With that said, my question to the two of you then is one of, do you reasonably think that a work group could come back with something in short order? Would that be helpful? If it's not helpful, I'm not going to ask for that exercise.
My own opinion is that I'd like to see the bill dropped.
Okay.
Well, the bill could be improved.
Improvement.
And make it better for the rest of us also. So I would like to see a work group and an opportunity. It shouldn't take more than just a couple of days, by probably next Tuesday. A lot of us are going to be leaving today, but we do have Monday morning. Most people can be here by 6 o'clock if they're really interested in something.
Okay.
6 o'clock?
Poor man.
Did he say 6 o'clock?
I'm already doing 7 to 7. Now it's going to be...
I think that's borderline
6 to 10. All right. With that...
Just close the work session. We'll go on the next bill.
Vice Chair Krieger convinces me that we need a work group. Vice Chair McLean and Representative Barreto, if the two of you would put your heads together and try and come up with an amendment by the first of the week, I would really appreciate that, because we're going to have to move on it.
Okay.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2687 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2184. again, please, Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You said public hearing. Is it?
I'm sorry. Thank you for catching that.
I think those pesticides have affected you.
I think it was the magic marker.
It's an age thing. See, so okay.
It's not the pesticides.
So don't hassle me. I'm gonna open. Excuse me. A work session on House Bill 2184. Thank you for catching that. I appreciate it, Mr. Gallagher.
Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2184 would direct the Department of Transportation and Oregon Parks and Recreation Department to provide a link from the ODOT website to the Parks and Recreation Department website for the purpose of providing information about how to purchase day-use parking passes for state parks requiring the pass, and would also direct the Parks and Recreation Department to work with ODOT and other state agencies to provide certain information regarding the purchase of day-use parking passes at ODOT field offices where applications for driver's license or vehicle registrations are accepted. There are no amendments on this bill.
Okay, very good. Any questions on this bill? Yes, Representative Whitson, please.
Is there a fiscal on this? I was talking to ODOT last night, and not about this in particular, but they feel that they're being tasked or burdened with an awful lot of things, and they need a new computer system. It's going to cost $90 million. And I was just wondering, is there a fiscal on this?
Representative Woodson.
Yes.
Chair, there is a fiscal on this. It's a minimal expenditure impact.
Which means what exactly?
Typically means less than $50,000. Anything further? Does that work for you, Representative? Okay, thank you. I am ready to recognize Vice Chair Krieger if there is no further discussion. Vice Chair Krieger.
Chair, would I move House Bill 2184 to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 2184 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative, I'd recognize you, but the only thing you could do is blow it at this point, I think. So this train is on the track, sir, and appreciate you being here this morning. Seeing no discussion on that motion, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodsett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
He is excused for other business.
Vice Chair McClain.
Aye.
Chair Whitt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And Representative, would you like to carry the bill? Wonderful. Thank you so much. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2184. And next up, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2653. Bear with me just a moment, please. Yes, please. Thank you. All right. Mr. Gallagher, would you tell us about this bill, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HB 2653 requires the State Department of Agriculture to establish standards for locating apiaries in residential zones in Oregon. There is a Dash 1 amendment, and the effect of that would be that it would require Oregon State University Extension Service, in consultation with the State Department of Agriculture, to create best management practices for beekeeping in residential areas. It would provide a method of dissemination for best practices, allow local governments to adopt ordinances relating to beekeeping consistent with those best practices, and allow local governments to charge a reasonable fee for registering hives in residential areas. And it makes findings related to beekeeping in urban and residential areas.
Very good. Thank you. And the Dash 1 amendment has general support, does it?
I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
All right. And the substance briefly of that amendment is what does the amendment do here for our discussion?
The Dash 1 amendment basically builds more of a cooperative venture between Oregon State University and the State Department of Agriculture. State Department of Agriculture had been listed alone on the original bill. And it actually added that it would be there'd be written best practices for beekeeping within residential areas. And there's a number of recommendations. Recommendations to address local nuisance ordinances, methods for mitigating conflicts, suggests local government oversight, disseminating best practices, and making information available to governing bodies of local governments and the general public on beekeeping issues.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
You have some information on this. I don't
Wonderful.
Know if you'd like me to testify on it or
if that would be your pleasure, please.
That'd probably be easier.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Would he settle down if we put some smoke that way?
He might not be buzzing around quite so much.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning,
Mr. Chair and
Committee. For the record, I am Chris Gorsuch. I'm the state representative for District 49, East Multnomah County. And I've been working with a number of groups on this particular bill. So I will just try to quickly go through this. The Dash 1 amendment is basically a gut and stuff of the original bill. It addresses the concerns of beekeepers, such as my constituent, Ms. Rotolto. She's worked very hard with her particular municipality, that's Gresham, to find common ground around residential beekeeping. In the spirit of what we wanted to provide, a tool for others to accelerate their process so they might be able to influence local leaders to provide a path for residential beekeepers. It's been a rather long and arduous journey for her and Gresham, not to say anything bad about the city of Gresham, of course. So we've convened a group that included representatives from League of Oregon Cities, Oregon Department of Ag, Portland Metro Beekeepers Association, Oregon State Beekeepers Association, City of Portland, and City of Gresham. After a number of hours of negotiation, we came up with a bill that I think will help people in similar situations where state support can inform cities, towns, and counties as attitudes change regarding residential beekeeping. So the updated version of our bill now puts in statute recognition of the importance of urban beekeeping to agricultural and horticultural pursuits. It also, as Mr. Gallagher already said, directs the Oregon State University Extension Service to develop, in consultation with the State Department of Ag and our beekeepers here, to create best practices for beekeeping in residential areas. It also encourages the use of nuisance ordinances to manage conflicts, which was particularly important to the leadership of the ORSBA and the PMBA. One aspect that I think is particularly important is that the bill directs the League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties to disseminate best practices and inform local elected officials on the importance of beekeeping so that the process that Ms. Rotolto went through can be greatly streamlined. So we hope that by educating the people that advise cities and counties, we've ensured that decisions regarding apiaries will be approached and made with confidence. So the main thing here is it's not to say cities, counties, you must, but it is to say, here are best practices and here's a way forward, and also to let people know that this is really a really positive thing, and to hopefully through League of Oregon Cities and Counties that they'll be able to inspire other urban entities and rural entities to go forward with these sorts of things.
Wonderful. Questions or comments for our colleague?
Now I feel very lonely.
Representative Gorsuch, having observed this, I think, first of all, you came up with a very innovative bill.
Oh, thank you.
And I think it was much needed. Secondly, I think your challenge has been oftentimes because you were breaking new ground, you actually organized people in the process of bringing this bill forward. I think that was important as well. When you organize folks, sometimes there are differences of political opinions. Sometimes people want to go in different directions.
Right.
And sometimes folks aren't even aware that they needed to be organized. You accomplished all of that without getting stung. Congratulations.
Oh,
oh, really good. I was waiting for the basketball.
He beat me to the punch.
And let me just say that a number of the beekeeper folks are back here in the back, and they were a pleasure to work with. And you're right. People wanted to go in different directions, but I think we came to a good compromise.
Well, I think you have as well. Additional questions or comments? Representative Esquivel.
I think it's a great bill. And the reason I say so is because in my particular municipality, it's against the law to have bees right inside the city limits. And there's no reason for that, because we have some open spaces there where it'd be a perfect fit for them. In fact, we had one particular issue where there was a bunch of undeveloped property, and there was a hive on that property. And so the city told them to take it down,
yeah,
get rid of it. So I just don't think that's right.
Good bill.
Anything further? Not seeing anything. Thank you very much, Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you.
Committee members, do we have anything further to discuss before I recognize Vice Chair McLean? Not seeing anything. Vice Chair McLean?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated 3/17/15.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McLean moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated March 17, 2015. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to her motion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair McLean, again, please.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2653 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair McLean moves House Bill 2653 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on her motion? Seeing none, hearing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moreto.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Crowder.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Excuse for other business.
Vice Chair McLean.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And Representative Gorsuch, would you like to carry the bill to the floor?
I would. I would like to inspire more bee discussion on the floor. And hopefully everybody saw this, too. There's a Portland Metro Beekeeping Association Bee Day coming up. And so if you're interested, that might be quite an informative and interesting thing. And I'd be glad to take it to the floor.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I will just request that we have a particular limit on the number of bad puns that will be involved.
Right. I was already planning.
I know. That's why I asked that.
And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2653. Thank you very much. Hold on here. Chuck, you passed me a note here. Okay.
What, this one?
You know, I'm half determined to find this thing, but maybe I better not.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2209. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2209 establishes a task force on shellfish to study efforts required to restore and expand shellfish resources, authorizes the task force to report to the legislature and pre-file legislation it recommends, also authorizes legislative administrator to employ staff, fixed duties and compensation, and use continuing legislative staff to the extent practical, and directs all state government agencies to assist the task force sunsets the task force. There is a dash four amendment that's been brought forward. That dash four amendment outlines and clarifies the policy underpinnings of the bill and expands the task force from the original six to 11 people and establishes details and criteria for membership and appointments.
Thank you very much. Representative McEwen, is there anything further that we need to know about this bill?
I don't believe so. The Dash 4 amendment is the fully formed issue about the task force with the request, the appropriation for Ways and Means to do research on ocean acidification, on molluscan broodstock, issues that are challenging our industry at this point in time, and also asks for the funding to begin the water quality testing in Tillamook Bay that's very, very important to the industry because of the issues of closure and limited harvest. So we're very, I think, pleased with the Dash 4s.
Great.
Chair Witt.
That is good news. And for an industry that is exceedingly important to folks on the coast, and many of those shellfish species indicators of how well we're doing here, maintaining a clean and healthy environment. This is another very important bill. Thank you for bringing that forward. Anything further before I recognize Vice Chair McLean? Vice Chair McLean, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 3-24-15.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McLean moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2209. Is there those Dash 4 amendments dated, March 24th, 2015. Is there any discussion on her motion? Seeing none, is there any objection to her motion? Seeing none, hearing none, her motion is adopted. Vice Chair McLean, again, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2209 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and the bill is to be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McLean moves House Bill 2209 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and that the bill be re-referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion on that motion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Escobar.
Excused for other business.
Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodsett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Excused for other business.
Vice Chair McLean.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes and is sent as amended on its way to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee members, very, very much. Representative McLean, thank you for your help here filling in. And Representative McEwen, a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, folks, we're going to move into our hearings process. I thank everyone for your patience while we sent those bills onto the floor and other good places that we send them. Mr. Gallagher, I need a shelf so I can organize my paperwork here. Okay.
Working on that.
There we go. We're going to use some of the urban lumber to do that we passed the other day.
There we go. Oh, juniper.
We could use juniper. Yeah. That way it won't rot. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3089. Mr. Gallagher.
Just as a aside, did you want to open all of these at once and have Representative Vince?
Yes, yeah. Thank you. In addition to the public hearing on House Bill 3089, I'm going to open on House Bill 3090, 3096, and 3269, including House Bill 3089. Thank you very much. We have a whole number of bills. If you tell us what we're opening on.
House Bill 3089 requires the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to conduct a study on increasing local revenues from mining operations and present a report to the interim committees of Legislative Assembly related to environment and natural resources on or before September 15th, 2016. House Bill 3090 requires the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to conduct a study on consolidating the permit processes for mining and present a report to the interim committee of the Legislative Assembly on the same date. House Bill 3096 requires the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to conduct a study of mineral resource potential in Oregon and to present a report to the Legislative Assembly on February 1 of each odd-numbered year. And House Bill 3269 requires the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to conduct a study of mineral resource potential in Oregon and present the report to the Legislative Assembly.
Thank you very much. And we have with us Rep. Bentz. Oh, and Representative Wilson. I'm sorry, sir. I missed you there.
No offense.
Good morning to each of you, and welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and thank you so much for hearing these bills. Cliff Bentz, District 60, and if we could go to the next slide. The one right after that. Yes. Give you a view of District 60 in a second.
All right.
There it is. There it is. There's District 60. So, members of the committee, we've been talking a lot the last couple of weeks, months, about the lack of money for our schools. And part of the reason is that we are vastly underutilizing the state's assets. We all know about timber. We don't talk quite a bit as much about mining. One of the things that I've learned in my area is that folks don't have a concept of the scale of the state. And when we talk about mining, suddenly the mental image is that this mining activity is going to be in your backyard and your life is going to be ruined. What the key here is to explain that we have an enormous backyard, absolutely humongous. The next slide, please. Oh, well, I'm sorry. Let's go back. Can we go back? There we go. Before we go to the next slide, I realized that one of the misperceptions of mining is that it's always digging a hole in the ground and hauling it off and leaving a mess. That's not the case anymore. We may well indeed dig a hole, but there's no longer any way to leave a mess. We have the appropriate regulations in place. And we've had 40-some-odd years of time to develop proper means of mining and much more environmentally friendly and much better for our state. 40 years, why? Because we haven't been doing any mining for basically 40 years. And thus we basically have a huge savings account of opportunity. Many people say, well, gee, mining is not a sustainable resource. Once you've mined it, it's gone. And there is some truth to that, but if one thinks about children for a moment, one recognizes that our greatest natural resource is our kids. And what we're doing by failing to put these assets to work is that we're allowing generations of children to be damaged irreversibly. We talk about it as though it's a moment in time, but in point of fact, it's a lifetime for these kids that we are not now educating appropriately. Many of these small communities, which I represent, have school buildings that you probably, if we had the ability, would pass laws against using. They're so poor, so sad, and yet we're surrounded by wealth. If you look at some of the area, I don't have the slide here, but there has been somewhere between $4 and $8 billion in gold reserves already recognized in my district, in the billions. And we are trying hard, and you're going to see a few pictures here in a moment, of one of the proposed mines that may go in after years and years and years of permitting activity. When and if that mine occurs, it will throw off about 250 jobs for about 10 to 15 years. Then the life of the mine will be over unless they find more of the resource. And I'll show you some pictures of how it will look after they're done. The purpose of my bills here is to do a couple of modest things. One is to maybe let the state know what we have and that we're not using. And so, and then another thing that I hope these slides will show is that we already are engaging in activities that are akin to mining, only we haven't called it that. So now let's go to the next slide. I call it inverted mining. Next slide. Let's go back. We're moving around. There we go. That would be called inverted mining. What's happening is we have 300-foot towers, and they're mining the wind. And we have them all over the place, and they're hugely supported by environmental interests. Why? Because they do a lot of really good things, one of which is to reduce our creation of CO2. Believe it or not, our mining would do the same thing. Because, of course, in Oregon, we have vast reserves of lithium, which is going to be used in the batteries in Telsas. Where are we getting it now? China. In fact, I went online just while I was waiting, watching, of course, and paying strict attention to your work session. But I also found a few articles on where the minerals are going to come from for the new gigabyte factory, whatever it is, that Elon Musk is putting together in Nevada. They're not coming from here, even though he's going to try. Those who would object to that which I am suggesting are basically asking that we export our dirty activities elsewhere. There's a lot of words for describing what that attitude is. I'm not going to use them. I'll simply say we need to do better than that. And what we will do better than that if we mine in Oregon, because our regulations protect our environment, not necessarily so in China. In fact, I assure you it's not so in China. Let's go to the next slide. Another pictures of inverted mining. Next. More pictures. This is actually, these are, believe it or not, these are some of my clients that I represent on a ranching basis that own this particular area. Next slide. More pictures of inverted mining. This is already going on. Let's go to the next slide. One more slide. That's how many acres are currently covered by wind farms. Looks like a big space, doesn't it? 60,000 acres. Oh, my God. Must be half of Oregon. Let's go to the next slide. By the way, I just wanted to show how tall these wind mining devices are. Next. Oh, there we go. See that little yellow square box there? That would be 65,000 acres. Okay? That is an area about 10 miles by 10 miles. 65,000 acres. My district is 19 million acres, the one we saw earlier. So I just want everyone to look there for just a moment. That is the size of the space currently devoted to wind towers in all of Oregon. Pretty small, huh? Yeah. Really small. Let's go to the next slide. I want to show you a mine that is throwing off value for the state of Oregon right now, and it's very close to where I grew up. In fact, you can actually see where I grew up just to the just that direction from that mine, about 30 miles in one of those valleys, above the huge town of Druzy. There were 15 people in Druzy when I grew up there. There's 8 now. It's shrinking. The mine, I want to show you. Let's go to the next slide. I think we zoom in. Oh, and actually, this is a picture of the mine itself. The area, believe it or not, that area is actually a state land section. It's 640 acres of state land that happen to have diatomaceous earth on it. Dynamites are, of course, little sea creatures that died millions of years ago and stacked up in big, huge piles. And we are now removing this ecological hazard by hauling off all these dead sea creatures and putting them through a plant and making them into things that clarify beer. So we're putting this unfortunate nature's mistake to work for us. How much area are we disturbing? About a little over a square mile. Should I go back and remind everybody how little that is relation? Yeah, let's do that. Let's go back one slide, please. Yes, there we go. Look at all that area. And that is barely part of my district. Again, the idea here is that mining is not going to destroy Oregon. It's actually going to help it. Let's go forward again in the slides one more. Okay, there we go. This shows you kind of where the mine is in relation to the valley. Those white areas are all diatomaceous earth. There's a lot of it there. The life of that mine is about 100 years. And so what they're doing is digging that stuff up, putting it on a truck, hauling it down that south to the highway, Highway 20, and then going to the EP plant. Next slide, please. There is the EP plant. We were hugely happy when this plant, let's go to the next slide. I think there's another, there we are, some distance away. It's out on a greasewood flat that is completely alkaline, worth nothing really to anybody except it's a great spot for this kind of a plant. This go to the next slide. These are the numbers on the plant. Throws off about 110 jobs. The total economic impact is $19 million a year. The payroll, you can see it. You can see the taxes. You can see what that activity is doing. Let's go to the next slide. 100-year reserve operates most of the time. Road traffic, so forth and so on. I want to go. Can we go back to the previous slide? One of the things that's not clear here is the royalties to the state. Yeah, it is clear. See at the bottom, annual royalties paid to the state of Oregon, $500,000. We just sit and collect the check. And that's been happening now for year after year after year, and will. And so can we talk about kids again? There's that $500,000 going straight into the school fund. Why aren't we doing more of this? That's the reason for, of course, my bill. Let's go to the next slide. Next slide. Now, I want to show you these pictures of mines before and after. Next slide. This is a vision, I guess, if you will, of the Calico Gold Mine located about 15 miles to the south of Vail, Oregon. And you can see that little opening. You see the opening there? I think there's a truck in front of it there. Mm-hmm. That's the mine tunnel that will go down to the gold reserve, which is has proven value of around $1.5 billion. They're going to dig a hole, slant down to where the mine is, and they're going to mine up like this into the gold reserve, letting the rock come down they don't use, bring it up, put it in a contained system, take the gold out, and then place some of the overburden to the right, which you can see, and the rest back into the mine itself. Let's go to the next slide. There's after the mine's gone. So can we go back to the mine, the picture before and now after? Let's go to the next slide. This is a picture above the mine site, and you can see, again, how it looks. This is about 150 to 200 jobs for 15 years. You'll notice the area behind it. It's dry out there. Many people would say, oh, my God, you're going to destroy the water. We're all going to get sick and die because you're going to destroy. Well, there is no water. That's one of the problems we have in our area right now. We don't have any. And so as our agricultural jobs go away, this would be the logical thing to replace them with. The next slide, that's how we think it will look when we're done. So, and I think that is, and one more slide, I think that's, yeah, I just wanted to go back to what we're already doing. I don't want to take too many cheap shots at wind power. I am not necessarily a fan of it. I'll just say that will be there for 20 to 30 years. The mine will be there for 10. The folks around these wind farms are dramatically affected by these machines. It makes it a utility area. What I'm trying to say is we're already out there. We're already doing these things. Why aren't we mining? That's what I'm really saying. Okay, so that is the slideshow. You should have in front of you a small bag of rocks. It looks like this. And you also have a letter. These you can use these either as bribes or you can throw them at us or somebody to follow.
They have a value over $50. I got to claim this.
Well, $50 for you to determine. Here's the letter you have in front of you. It says, "I recall you." I asked the gentleman that gave these to me. It was Saturday at 4 o'clock in Baker City at one of my final of my 9 town halls. As I recall, you have the softest soapstone, different Grant County jades, chrome deoxide bronzite, and the hard as emerald chrome spinel. And then he says, a little further on, for example, chrome spinel is very rare and easily fetches $50 to $400 per carat. The trouble is I have no idea which is which in those bags. So you either have just perfectly worthless rocks or perhaps one of those. I don't know. The point is that we don't know what we have in Oregon. That's the point. And this bill would give us a chance to sort that out. And at least understand the value that we should be utilizing for our kids. And that's the purpose of these bills. Thank you so much for your patience.
Thank you very, very much. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass, Cave Junction. I trust that most of you will be home by 5 o'clock with your rock hammers trying to find out what you really want.
Some of us have started in just now.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you hearing this bill 3269 today. And I want to thank Representative Benz for a wonderful tour of his district. Oregon is a magnificent state. The mineral wealth is rich, and we're rich in so many things. Josephine County has a rich history in mining, but the kind of mining that I think we're interested in this day and age is not like the mining that Josephine County was famous for back in the days of yore. The bill that I have here requests essentially what Representative Benz's bill requests, and that is that we would love to have the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries conduct a study of the mineral wealth and potential in our area. I'll be real brief because I think most of this has been covered, but one of the things that I think we're most excited about in Josephine County is the appearance of a metalloid called tellurium. And it is, in fact, there's so much excitement about it. We had a mineral summit in the county about a year ago where we talked about the presence of many great and strategic metals in our area. And by the way, strategic metals is an interesting subject because we have a great need for that in the defense of our country. And the shocking thing is we're forced to buy most of those from people who are not our friends. But we're excited about tellurium. And tellurium is an interesting metalloid that is being used in the production of solar panels. And we're excited about that because tellurium is not just anywhere. And it looks like we have a significant store of that in Josephine County. I think most of you are familiar with what I've said before in front of other committees, and that is the fact that our economic problems in Josephine County are legend. We're having a terrible time affording basic public services. And of course, we always have trouble funding nearly anything these days due to the loss of the timber industry, and we've never recovered from that. So we're excited about the potential that may lie under the ground, and that's why we're here today to talk about these great resources that we have and an opportunity to contribute more tax revenue to the state and lead to a better life for the people in these rural communities. So for that purpose, I thank you for even considering what we have here today, and look forward to seeing what you do with it. Thank you.
Thank you both so very much. Questions or comments for our colleagues? Representative Whitsitt, please.
Thank you for bringing these bills forward. They're probably two of the most important bills that we could possibly have this session. Rep. Benz, are you familiar with a large placer mining deposit in Baker County, I believe it is, that I may ask Ian Maiden about it, but it's my understanding there's already a formerly mined placer gold mine that has a lot of extra material there that contains more gold now that we have new methods to remove the gold from it. And it is worth billions of dollars. And if we actually took the gold out of it and then recovered the area, it would look even better than it does now because we have these massive piles of placer deposit, you know, left from the original mining. So
right, that's it. Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, the area is, I think, south of Sumter, and there's indeed all kinds of opportunity there. Again, it's a matter of appropriate permitting, getting it right, doing everything correctly, and moving forward. I think, though, really, at the end of the day, it's a matter of having people understand the link between these valuable resources and kids, and showing that if we did a better job of utilizing what we have, we could do a better job for our state and our future. That's the challenge in all these discussions.
And if I may, I think these are actually on state lands already, the tailings piles. And so the money would pretty much just go straight to the school fund from this.
Correct.
So yeah. Great opportunity.
May I ask it?
Please.
So are we talking about where the big dredges went up the mm-hmm. stream? Yeah. I mean, talk about scars on the landscape. That would be a wonderful thing, not only to recover that,
right.
but to also repair that, because it's just miles and miles and miles of these big piles of rock along the streams.
Chair. Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Thank you so much for being here, Representative Benz, Representative Wilson. This is an important topic, I think, for all of us. For me in particular, we have a mining operation in my community that's rather unique, and I will thank Representative Witsit. The minerals that we mine in Representative Krieger's in my district actually emanate from the Klamath River Basin. There are minerals that come up. They wash down the Klamath River for millennia. They come up the coast in suspension, and when the currents slow down, it drops out of suspension and ends up on our beaches and congregates over hundreds of thousands of years. And it's a chromite and garnet and a ferrous product that has tremendous value. It's a different type of mining. You take the sand and you run it through a machine that pulls it out with magnets. Sand goes back in the truck and goes back into the mine site, and they plant trees on it. And when it's done, it's, again, prettier than it was when it started. It's all over the state that we have these opportunities. And Oregon Resources Corporation came into our community 10 years or so ago and has had some success in mining chromite, which is used in the foundry industry around the world. So we have unique opportunities here to not only put people to work, but to impact the state in a really positive way and help take care of our kids. So I just really am delighted that you're bringing these bills, that we're having this conversation and raising awareness as to what the possibilities are. We can do it right. We can do it well. Our operation in Coos Bay is an award-winning operation for the reclamation work that they do. And we can demonstrate how to do this right.
Great. Thank you.
And gentlemen, I want to thank you before you leave for your testimony, but most of all, I want to thank you for bringing these bills forward and providing hope and an opportunity for folks who live in rural parts of our state to have an opportunity to be gainfully employed, to support their families, to support their community, and to make rural Oregon economically viable. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, committee.
Appreciate it. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Ian Madden and Richard Riggs. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Vice Chair Krieger, McLean, and members of the committee. My name is Ian Madden. I am in my fifth week as the interim state geologist and executive director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, also known as DOGAMI. So I will ask your forbearance on issues of protocol. I will also offer after the hearing to take a look at your rocks and see if I can help you figure out which one is. We're here to talk about all four of these bills, and I don't know if you have any preference as to which order we take them on in.
Whatever works best for you.
Okay. So since I'm started talking, I will take on 3096 and 3269, and Richard will take on the other two bills.
Okay.
So first off, I'd like to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to come and talk to you about these bills. And then I'd like to tell you that we take no position on these bills, but I would like to talk about DOGAMI's experience with mineral resources assessment. So for much of the 78 years that DOGAMI's been in existence, mineral resources have been a major part of our activities. In the 30s and 40s, we grub-staked prospectors. We provided free assay services through our laboratory to prospectors in Southwest Oregon and Northeast Oregon, and mining and minerals were a mainstay of the department's activities. And in fact, in our enabling legislation, it says that, and pardon me if I have to read this legalese, that we shall initiate and conduct studies and surveys of the geological and mineral resources of the state and their commercial utility, serve as a bureau of information concerning Oregon mineral resources, mineral industries, and geology, and conduct a mineral survey of the state and catalog each and every mineral occurrence and deposit, metallic and non-metallic, together with its location, production, method of working, name of owner, agent, and other detailed information. We will consider and study kindred scientific and economic questions in the field of geology and mining that are deemed of value to the people of Oregon, and we will study minerals and ores, additional uses for the state's minerals, and explore the possibilities for using improved treatment processes, mining methods, and reclamation techniques for regulated mines and abandoned mine lands. Starting in the 1990s, as our funding situation changed and our general fund component was reduced, we ended up doing less and less of the mineral resource assessment because we were forced to change our business model to one in which we are supported by outside project work. And we have had a very difficult time finding funding for mineral resource assessments from outside projects. The last time that we did anything that resembled a systematic statewide mineral resource assessment was in the late 1980s when we looked at the industrial minerals talc and limestone. The last time that we looked at gold and silver resources statewide was in 1968. So in the intervening 30 or 40 years, we've learned quite a bit about mineral resources and their occurrences, and we've also undergone a digital revolution, as most areas have, and we now have at our fingertips a tremendous amount of digitized information about the geology, geophysics, geochemistry of the state that would serve as the basis for a comprehensive statewide mineral resource assessment. And I should add that the department has never actually looked at the entire state for all potential commodities. We've done one commodity at a time, or we've looked in a small area of the state. So the department has the authority to carry out mineral resource assessments. We have a history of carrying out mineral resource assessments. We have data and staff that would allow us to carry out mineral resource assessments. We do not have funds to carry out mineral resource assessment, and unfortunately, neither of these bills would change that situation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the statewide mineral resource assessments, or if we want, we can move on to the next two bills.
Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much would you estimate you would need in your department funds to be able to carry out something like this?
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Krieger, and McLean, and members of the committee, I would like to take a pass on that. I'm not sure. Again, as I said, I'm into 4 weeks. I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk to you about how much money we would need. I think I can only tell you,
we can give you
that we need the money that's in the governor's recommended budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair McLean.
Okay. So I'll try a different tact on this. I understand. Well, first of all, there were two folks in front of us today, as you heard the report, that were talking specifically about, you know, two district areas, you know, and they showed some parts of the state of Oregon, and that they feel have some real resource possibilities. And you also just indicated that there were some basic things that you'd learned since 68 and since the 80s that you've been accumulating because of other work that you've done. So without giving us a dollar figure, you've indicated you've got staff, you've got ability, and you've got actually the ordinance and the power to do it. So do you think it's something that's worthwhile as far as giving more information, that the basic information that they're asking for is worthwhile for helping us understand some economic potential?
So Chair Witt, Vice Chair McKrieger and McLean, members of the committee, I can certainly talk about the utility of this information, and so we need to have a clear understanding of what we can and can't do. Mining companies do not explore for minerals in areas where there is not an indication that those minerals are present.
Right.
And so it is necessary but not sufficient for them to have good regional information that points to mineral occurrences. And to that end, an improved mineral resource assessment would almost certainly increase exploration activity in Oregon, assuming that the results of those mineral resource assessment showed that there were significant commodities to be had. The other caveat is that there's a long way between a mineral occurrence and a mine. And the factors that make a mine work have a lot to do with geology, but they also have a lot to do with global markets. Mm-hmm. They have a lot to do with costs. They have a lot to do with external economic factors. And opening up a mine requires all of those pieces to come together and be there at the same time. And so there are certainly opportunities for having more mines if we have more information, but there is no guarantee that that will happen, and it is almost certain that the time lag between doing a mineral resource assessment that led to more exploration, that led to a mine, that led to the jobs, would be a decade at the least. That's simply how long it takes for these things to develop.
Thank you very much. And committee members, I know that several of you have questions or comments here. If we could, I'd like to give our other guests an opportunity to testify, and then we can open up for questions for both of them.
Thank you, Chair Witt, Vice Chairs Krieger and McLean, and committee members. While Ian has been on the job 5 weeks, I've been on the job six. I am Richard Riggs. I'm the Assistant Director for Department of Geology, and I'm in charge of the Mineral Land Regulation and Reclamation Program. Try saying that five times fast. On House Bill 3089, it's very similar to the two bills that Mr. Maiden just presented on. So the issues are very similar. I won't really talk about that. You do have a copy of my written testimony. I will say that our staffing is currently not allow us to conduct activities as envisioned by that bill. On House Bill 3090, that requires us to conduct a study of the consolidated mining process as it is currently going on in Oregon. These statutes were first enacted in 1991 and have not been used until today. And the mine site that Representative Bench showed you, the conceptual drawings of the tunnel and the before and after, that is the Calico Resources mine that is ongoing about 20 miles south of Vail. And this is the first time those statutes have actually been exercised. The House Bill 3090 requires us to report back to the legislature in the fall of 2016 on how the processes went for this. And the process will still be ongoing at that time and probably ongoing for another year or more after the deadline envisioned by this bill. Of course, you know, studies are valuable and important in making sure you document your lessons learned and how to improve in the future, and we don't disagree with that. The timing, unfortunately, if we have to undertake a study in 2016, it would probably be incomplete because the process itself would not have run to completion. And I'm happy to take any questions because I know you pushed on time.
Thank you very much. I'd like to recognize Representative, excuse me, Representative Esquivel, followed by Representative Whitsitt.
I was gone just for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Representative Whitsitt.
Are either of you familiar with the mines that I was talking about, the placer mine tailings down by Sumter on the Department of State lands?
Sure, Chair Witt, Vice Chair Krieger and McLean, and members of the committee. Certainly, the Sumter dredge tailings are the result of placer mining that went on with a sort of a dredge operation that had its own captive pond and sort of built its pond and floated its way through the valley bottom there along the Powder River near Sumter. And it was active up through World War II when most gold mining around the country stopped for economic and political reasons. And it is certainly likely that those old, rather simple methods of gravity separation, you know, that go back to the 1850s, left a lot of gold, and that there is a significant amount of gold there. It is not, that does not necessarily mean that it is economic to recover it. And so, you know, this is one of the issues, again, with mining is that there's a great cost to get at the material and things have to pencil out. So, and I don't know whether, what kind of evaluations have been done of that prospect and whether there are actually economically recoverable gold. I will, as an example, point out that Representative Bentz talked about the $1.5 billion worth of gold at the Calico Resources site. They have recently released a preliminary economic assessment, which is kind of a formal test of their resources that's used as an investment vehicle. And they have about $750 million worth of economically recoverable gold. So only half the gold in that deposit can actually be dug out at a profit. And so that's always the issue.
Please. Is that heap leach, or what is the recovery method on that? Do you know? On the Calico mine?
On the Calico. Chair Witt, members of the committee. Yeah, so on the Calico mine, they are planning on doing a combination of gravity separation and a closed cycle, a cyanide leach, as opposed to a heap leach. So all of the activities will take place within a industrial building, and they will recycle the cyanide, and they won't have sprinklers covering acres and acres of ore.
One last question. If we narrowed this down to just looking at the Sumter tailings that the state of Oregon already owns, to do a study of that, do you have any concept of how long that would take to, and so we're talking about just a really limited area, and something that the state already owns, so we wouldn't have to acquire it, we wouldn't have to go through any, you know, anything where we're determining royalties or whatever. But would something like that, and I'm not even saying just Sumter, but an area that we're looking at for you to evaluate instead of the whole state, what you're saying is it's just too expensive and too time-consuming to do the whole state at once. But what if you take certain areas that have known potential and evaluate them as projects? Is that a possibility?
Okay. Chair Witt, members of the committee, yes, that's a possibility, but sort of paradoxically, the more that you dial in on a particular property, the more surety you need to get and the more data you need to collect. So if we were to go to look at Sumter property to try to determine whether it had economically recoverable gold, we would need to have core holes drilled and analysis done. I can imagine it would cost several hundred thousand dollars worth of drilling and analysis to get enough information to actually demonstrate whether it was economically viable or not. So in some respects, it's actually less expensive to look broadly at the entire state than it is to try to, in essence, prove out a particular deposit.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. When we allow mining to be practiced in the state of Oregon, and when we're all finished, all said and done, do we demand a performance bond for the tail end of it to make sure that it's brought back to its natural habitat as close as possible?
Chair Witt, committee members, Representative Esquivel, I think you were out when I introduced myself. I am in charge of the Mineral Land Regulation and Reclamation Program. And so to answer your question, yes. For a mine, we do require a performance bond, which is then surety that the mined area will be reclaimed. If the operator walks away from the site, let's say, then we would have the bond.
I did miss part of your...
As part of the application process, and they have to present a bond.
And for the record, that last response was from Mr. Riggs.
Sorry.
Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Sure. What?
Appreciate your presence and your testimony. Thank you. I'd like to call up next, please, Marge Easley. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marge Easley, and I'm here representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We support policies that promote both conservation and development of land as a natural resource in accordance with Oregon's land use goals. And we are certainly not against additional dollars for the state school fund. However, we oppose the four bills before you today. Because for several reasons, we question the need for conducting multiple studies, and we believe that the language in the text of the bills suggests that they were designed with predetermined conclusions. The League conducts lots of studies, and we try not to go into a study thinking, okay, we know what the result is going to be. And we believe that these are designed to achieve one result. And we especially are questioning the authorization of consolidating permit processes for mining activity, which we believe will accelerate production but lead to fewer avenues for input from local government and citizens. We also realize that the current regional solutions that is being proposed is a mechanism to ensure that permits are processed in a timely and concurrent manner, and so that this is already going to be built into the system as far as streamlining somewhat the permitting process. We all, our biggest reason for opposing these studies is because we believe that Dogami receives limited general fund dollars at this time, and they have been charged with focusing on data for natural hazards and water issues. And we have some dire water issues in the state, and so we believe that this should take precedent. We believe that these proposed studies are not a wise use of much-needed tax dollars at this particular time. So that concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the committee? Marge, I know your testimony was that there would be, in essence, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but there'd be a preconceived outcome. And I think that, again, I don't want to interpret the intentions of those who brought the bill forward, but I think they would agree with you on that the intention was to conduct studies which would look into the minerals that were possibly developable, here in the state of Oregon, and the potential that it could bring some kind of economic return, not only for the companies that would do the development, but the communities and the local area as well. And so, I agree with what you say. I think the proponents would agree with what you say. And everyone is in agreement, and I'm not understanding. I take it to me that you're suggesting, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm inferring that you're suggesting that there's a problem with that.
The only problem I see is that if you go into a study saying, okay, this is what the outcome of the study is going to prove or to bring dollars to the state, then why are you initiating the study if you already know what the outcome is going to be? It is a given that there will be dollars coming into the state as a result of increased mining in certain areas of the state. And so if this is a given, then I'm not sure. I think the language of the bill as currently written may be the problem. I'm not disagreeing with the purpose.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I was trying to get. I better understand now. Representative Gorsuch, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what you're saying, but in any research, we have an idea of what we expect to find. We have a hypothesis, and so it would make sense to say we think in these places we're going to find something, and then you would want to carry the research forward. I don't know many studies that are conducted where we just don't have a clue. There's a reason why we come up with the study to begin with.
I agree. I just question the need for kind of a blanket study of the entire state.
Okay. May I follow up?
Please.
The one thing, and again, I understand what you're saying. We have serious economic problems. And we do have to deal with, water's a huge issue. But it seems like we could resolve some of those other problems if we had more revenue coming from some of these things. And so it's kind of almost a catch-22.
You know,
do you invest in this and forego some of the other things that are important? I think maybe you try to do a little of both.
I agree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair McLean, followed by Representative Whitsitt.
Yes.
I've looked also at your written testimony, and it seems to me like the main message that you were bringing today was that there's concern from your organization about just are there the resources to actually do the work with just the goals that have been listed, you know, by the agency.
Correct. That is our key one, is the limited resources available and the tax dollars that are needed in other areas that have been already designated.
Thank you.
Representative Woodson.
I view this as how do we prioritize our money that we have in this state? Do we spend it to help make more money, or do we just send it out the door, you know, with nothing to show in return for actually having a revenue stream? And I view this as an assessment of potential revenue-producing projects in the state. And so I view it from a business model where we're taking money, if we could, you know, get our legislature to agree with it, to make more money instead of just having money go out that's never recovered. Instead, if you will, we're spending money to, you know, make more money. So I think it's an entirely different view. One side is, let's take all this money that the state's got and send it out and we never see it again, or let's take a little bit of money and see if we can make more money with it. You know, I view it as nothing different than, you know, putting money into a certain type of bank account that accrues more, if you will. So it's just a different view, I think, that we have. But I think we're looking at this as an assessment of potential revenue-producing projects in the state.
All right. Anything further? Ms. Easley, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Steve Pfeiffer and Jim Welch. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Steve Pfeiffer. I'm a land use and environmental permitting attorney with offices in Portland at Perkins Coie. And I say that to give you a little bit of context for my comments in support of the package of bills before you. My practice, which, as you can imagine, involves getting permits, state, federal, and local, including the appellate process, for a wide variety of development projects, including mining projects. Right now, I was just sitting in the back thinking, I have three mining projects in various parts of the state right now, two of which have been approved and are under appeal, a third of which is beginning what Mr. Riggs noted as a long process in Eastern Oregon for a very significant, probably the largest mine that would hit this state for precious metals, again, on the eastern side. In the course of that, I don't want to leave you with the impression that I'm not a fan of the Oregon land use and other environmental permitting processes, because I am. Because I've also been on the other side. I served as chair of the Land Conservation and Development Commission for 6 years. Actually, I was on the commission and served for chair for three, I think. And in the course of that, I also chaired the subcommittee in 96 to 98, where we rewrote what was called the Goal 5 Division 23 rule, which, among many other things, involved how the state regulates throughout the state uniformly mining practices at the local level. What are known as the PAPA process, the Comp Plan Zone Map Amendment. I also served on the Portland Planning Commission for 9 years. So I have the unique luxury of being on both sides of the regulatory scheme. And I am one, and there are people in my bar meaning the people who practice what I do, who also will tell you that the scheme, such as it is for obtaining permits, is workable. And it's not without its flaws. It's not without a lot of transparency and delay associated with that and other things. But at the end of the day, permits are available and they can be obtained. One has to be diligent, one has to be focused, and one has to have reason to go through that process. And that's the Oregon way, and it does work. And I say that for this reason. That view that I just expressed is not shared by many development entities in the mining industry within and outside of this state. That's just kind of a truism. And I understand why. They've either failed, or they've been told that they will fail, or they're fearful of entering the permit process. There's a wide range of reasons for that. And mining, at the top of the list, does generate that kind of antipathy among the industries that you've talked about today. And that Representative Bent's bill is designed to encourage, as I understand it, consideration of for coming to this state, Eastern Oregon in particular, Southern Oregon for that purpose. And I guess with that, my comment is that I would, and this is personal, I'm not here on behalf of any of those development clients or entities or mining interests. My comment is would be to urge you to adopt this package of bills, both the inventory package to identify what's out there, essentially what's available, what the resource values, what the economic values and the rest is, and actually the remainder of those policy statements that are in those bills, which acknowledge the importance to the state for economic and other reasons that the legislature finds important, to send a message. And that message would go out to those interests who you need to partner with at the state level if you're going to see this kind of resource activity occur. Private entities, quasi-private entities, mining interests, not, unlike the Calico is a good example, and the others that you'll see in the near term. Oregon Resources is another example. For those that we've attracted, there are many more we've lost. And the reason we've lost them is two things, in my opinion. There's not a known inventory or a well-established, other than anecdotal inventory, and Representative, you're absolutely right about the tailings piles in Sumter's. There are people out there today with buckets and shovels actually taking gold out of those on a hand basis. We could see a much more efficient process if they thought there was the ability to get the permits to do it. So if you're going to partner with those folks and you're going to induce them to come, you need to do, in my opinion, two things, and these bills do this. One is establish an inventory of resources, particularly in the large landscape of eastern and southern Oregon. And the importance of many of those resources is growing because of the technology needs, as you know. Many of those metals that we've talked about weren't even on the charts for mining and consumption a number of years ago. First of all, though, inventory it. And I say that because in Nevada, just by example, the private sector has inventoried those resources in many of the states which historically have been more mining friendly. And so they haven't waited for the state to step up. There are extensive studies. All you have to read is Exxon in the Arctic and everything in between. The private sector, where they believe there's both a resource base and a reason to think they could obtain the necessary permits, will go out and do that. That hasn't been our luxury to date. And I'm not saying that with a judgment. I'm just saying that's the perception that many people out there would have. And the second thing I would urge you to do in addition to that which these bills represent is a legislative policy statement saying we find this to be important at the state level, at the highest level, both identifying what's out there and acknowledging that if done properly and if done with the appropriate regulatory schemes, and as Mr. Riggs pointed out, we have an extraordinary regulatory program in place beyond almost any other state that I'm aware of for extraction, reclamation, and the like. But send the message to those outside interests that there's reason to consider Oregon, both because of what's in the ground and that permits can be obtained if you're diligent, pay attention, invest, and do it right. And I'll leave you with one anecdote. About a year and a half ago, I was working for, again, a large company which is moving forward with a large mining project on the east side. It's a Canadian international company. They have established mines in Turkey, South America, Australia, and a number of others. They're very sophisticated. We were a year into the due diligence. I did the standard drill of a 50-page memorandum identifying all the state and federal local permits that are needed to mine this thing, what the tests are, what kind of expert testimony they're going to need, what their burden of proof will be, and at the end of the day, if I find a fatal flaw, I tell them. If I believe that it is doable, if they do it correctly, I tell them that. And I tell them basically my role is to suggest to them how I believe they should do it. I did that. They went out on an investment memorandum, and they are listed on the Canadian Stock Exchange, which triggered a number of disclosure rules, as you can imagine. When they invited investors for this project, they had to disclose virtually everything, including the nature of the minerals, the quantity of the minerals, the nature of virtually everything at risk. I got a call one day from the CEO saying, well, we have a new problem. We have, at the highest levels, probably all the way to that stock exchange and a few other levels, a strong perception from folks who have reviewed this disclosure that everybody knows that you can't get a permit in Oregon. Now, I say that not to repeat an anecdote we've all heard many times, and I personally believe, and I try and rebut it every turn, but it hit me. I had to write a memorandum explaining why not just technically these permits are available and could be successfully defended if appealed and everything in between if you do it correctly by the rules, but I had to write a memorandum indicating why their perception was inaccurate that the state was not open for business for this kind of activity. Now, I could draw upon my roles, which is why I mentioned them earlier, that I had some insight because I chaired the commission and I chaired the subcommittee that wrote the rules that were designed to make it a level playing field with certainty to the developer if they choose to invest and all that. And I wrote a memorandum speaking very strongly that, in my own belief and professional experience, that yes, the state is open for business. We have regulatory schemes for good reasons, and they are, at the end of the day, susceptible to a permit. So that's a myth, and we dispelled it, and the investment went forward, and we disclosed. The best part of that, though, was we did not have to include in the disclosure the concept that Oregon is not open for business for mining activities, for precious metals. That was the – if I hadn't been able to overcome that, that would have literally been in the investment documents. So I'll leave you with that. I encourage the adoption of these bills. I think, personally, it sends the right message. I am very confident with the regulatory schemes that it will only be done in a correct way that furthers the needs of this generation and the next. But I think without it, we're missing opportunities, and with it, we're opening doors to new opportunities.
Thank you very much. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt and committee members. I'm Jim Welsh with Oregon Cattlemen. And we support all these bills, this package of bills. And it's really nice to follow this kind of testimony because I can just say, yes, amen, and good bills should pass. I really don't need to add anything, but we support anything that will bring some new jobs and economic development, certainly in the rural sector. And it helps diversify private property interests. And the millions of acres that we represent in the cattle industry, there is an awful lot of mining opportunities on those properties also. So we'll be very supportive of this, and we hope they go forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Sir, you open such a door to a conversation that I am very, very willing to step through. I watched and was a part of the Oregon Resources Project development. It took them 20 years to get through a permitting process. They ended up in a situation where their financing has a shelf life. If the permitting process extends beyond the shelf life of the financing, the project goes away. That project ended up on a Friday afternoon in a position where their financing was expiring and a permit was sitting on a desk. It took a heroic effort from local elected and appointed officials and our legislative delegates to make some effort to get a permit moving that was going to kill that project. And it actually was resurrected at the 11th hour because of the effort of a lot of people. I guess I'm going to take issue with your comments that they did get it done. But the effort that they put in and the cost associated with the length of time the permitting took was just stunning to me. And so, you know, I understand that you're saying we have a land use system in place that is there for a reason. I've been involved in other projects in my district where it wasn't as rosy a picture as I think you're making. And I feel compelled to say that because I've seen it. And I think these bills, you know, may be helpful in dispelling. I've had projects go away because of the perception that you cannot get it done here. And I've been involved in them. And I think we do have a perception problem. And I'm really grateful. I'm very grateful that you have in your shop the experience that you have and the background that you have and the knowledge that you have and the ability to speak to a company that wants to come to Oregon to work and help them navigate a process. But it's not easy.
If I could respond just very briefly.
Please.
I don't want to send the wrong message. I've been doing permitting of this nature for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. If I let my own personal judgments based on the experiences I've had in the regulatory system, not just state, local and federal as well, affect me too much, I would have had to stop a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I compartmentalize fairly successfully, call it denial, whatever it might be, and I look at it as a process to be pursued and to successfully get through. I'm not telling you we can't have substantial improvements.
Okay.
And most of us who do this for a living could identify in a heartbeat various ways we could further our economic prosperity in this state with some modifications to the regulatory scheme. I am quite familiar with the state regulatory scheme, and I have a long list. I agree with you completely. And for the people that you've seen leave because of the frustration, I have to tell you we have little sense of how much we have lost because you cannot prove a negative. Those people show up in my office, and I have to advise them on occasion to give it up because that's my job. And I tell them, don't spend 6 years and $10 million because you will not get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like having to say it, and I don't like having to write it, but I'm not in a position, unlike you, to change the rules, at least in any meaningful way. And therefore, I have no choice. So what I do where I can is tell them how to get through it, notwithstanding our reputation, notwithstanding the pages and pages of regulations, and notwithstanding the obvious and accurate perception of the appellate process. I got a permit for a large, it's for the Jordan Cove export terminal, for the ship slip and access channel for that.
I was right there with you.
I got that
5 years
for the Port of Coos Bay on December 19. This is just to give you a thought about 2011. I had the oral argument at the Court of Appeals on that permit approval 3 weeks ago. I'll get the decision from the Court of Appeals in another year if I'm lucky. Now, has Verizon stayed the course? Yes. That's an example of one who went through the system, stays the course, and does it. The point is, that's not a judgment again. It's reality. And my only point is, I agree with everything you say and probably then some representative.
Mm-hmm.
All I would say here today is this bill, small step or not, is a step in the right direction to induce those folks who would come and pursue these resources to induce them to feel more comfortable doing so. It won't be easy. It won't be quick.
Just a brief follow-up, if you don't mind.
Please.
I applaud you. You're my hero of the day for having. I'm a very patient woman, and we've stayed the course on a lot of things that have taken a decade longer than they should have. But that's what it takes in Oregon, and you are sending that message very clearly and articulating it very well. With patience and with perseverance, that it can get done. I'm just not sure it should be as onerous as it is, because as you know, we are driving business away with perception, and I'm sad about that. So thank you so much for your good work,
small
sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Representative Whitsitt, followed by Representative Esquivel.
Thank you. Most people in the legislature know, but a lot of people outside don't know that I'm a geologist, a multi-degreed advanced geologist. And among my colleagues in industry, Oregon, the term you used is the exact words that I hear back. Oregon is not open for business, for economic geology, basically, you know, mining, oil recovery. And it's very, very frustrating to have to talk to people that have this perception, because we have such a great resource here in this state, and it's really hard to overcome. But among the 50 states, I think we have the worst reputation, and yet we have some of the strongest resources available to us in the state. And I worked for a gold mine in Nevada near Winnemucca for some years with my first husband, and I can tell you that the recovery methods for gold mines are amazing now. I also work for one of the largest oil companies in the world as a stratigrapher, and it's what I did for both companies, even though you wouldn't think gold and oil are the same. There are some processes that are the same, and that's what the stratigrapher does. You know, what I've seen over the years, the recovery and reclamation processes are amazing. We leave things as good as when, before we started, basically. And so I just think that it's really sad when people think that it's a destructive process, because it's not. It is just taking advantage of a fabulous resource that we have to use for something else like education. So it's more of a statement than a question. But I agree with you. The exact term Oregon is not open for business is what we hear.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What Representative Whitson just said is very, very true, and the reason I say this is because we had a company, and doesn't matter what you think of Walmart, but Walmart had bought a piece of property in the city limits of Medford that was zoned for that particular use, and it took them over 8 years to get a permit. Now, something's wrong with that picture. The other thing is, I used to be in the economic development part of Southern Oregon, Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. I was past president of that. And I had companies that would tell me on the side, we're coming here in spite of the way you treat people to come here. And that's a fact. And that's pretty sad. But I think the biggest thing, the 800-pound gorilla in the room here is that Senate Bill 100 was a very admirable intention, but we have let the bureaucratic people go out, make more rules than you probably could ever fathom today. And I don't think there's any one person in this state that knows all those rules. I remember our retiring planner in the city of Medford said, you know, I used to have three-ring binders, and that was the Oregon State land use laws. And he had a pretty good-sized office, and when he retired, and this has been quite some time ago, he said you could fill this office clear to the ceiling and go down the hall 20 feet with all the rules today. And he said, I defy you to find anyone that knows all those rules. So we're making rules on top of rules on top of rules to justify existence, and some of them don't make sense. But more importantly, we've layered things to the point of where it's almost a breakdown in the system itself, in my opinion. And the reason I say that is because in Central Point, which is a community next to Medford, it takes you about 2 months to bring in a piece of land, annex it into the city. In Medford, it may be as long as 14 months.
Okay.
Well, something wrong with the system when we do that. So anyway, I think that we do have a problem in the state, and I agree, and I can't believe that you've done this for as long as you have and with the patience that you have, and thank God you have those patience.
Vice Chair Krieger, followed by Vice Chair McLean.
You've heard it all. Maybe I'll say it a little bit different way, but we've created a quagmire of bureaucracy that hardly anyone could get through. You've heard about the time. There's several different types of permits that we get. You can get them in Washington, California, Idaho, 6 months to a year, Oregon, and you're going to know almost from the start that if you jump through certain hoops, you'll be successful. In Oregon, you can go up to 2-3 years and have not know at the end of that investment whether or not you'll be able to be successful. I would say from what I've been watching over the years being on the coast, special interest groups, the environmental for-profit industry, Sierra Club, you can go right on down the line. You have to change who has standing in court to sue. And when you do that, you can straighten it out in a hurry.
Part of the puzzle, you're right, Representative.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McLean.
Well, we've opened up the end of this meeting to a lot of philosophical topics, you know, that are a little bit larger than, I think, the bills that are in front of us today. But I just wanted to thank everyone who gave testimony today. I felt like it gave a really good, and maybe there are a few more to go.
Two more to go.
But I just want you to know that I think that what we've had in front of us has to talk about economic development and also how to do it right. And so that's not ignoring the land use law. It's not ignoring reclamation. It's not ignoring looking at both economic and environmental issues. So I don't want to go there today because we don't have enough time as far as maybe some thoughts I might have on some of these issues. But I want to thank you for your testimony, and I would love to hear from the last two.
All right. Before we do, I got my chance as the chairman. I wish Jim Welch was here, because two sides of the same coin. I think it could be argued that the cattlemen don't have a dog in this fight. But every one of us has a dog in this fight. Mm-hmm. And this is an Oregon issue. This is an opportunity for our fellow Oregonians. And the fact that one natural resource group took it upon themselves to support an entirely different natural resource group, I just admire what the cattlemen did. Mm-hmm. Steve, in terms of your testimony, it's a delight to have someone who speaks, I think, from the middle, who's had experience on both sides, who has a very balanced opinion and approach to things. I truly was. I not only appreciated your testimony, and I don't mean this in any demeaning fashion. I was entertained by your testimony, and you brought something up here, and you said that you couldn't help. You were not in a position to change the process, but you are in a position to help us change the process. And sir, I may be going to put you on the spot here right now. We may be having an opportunity in this committee to do some informational hearings in a couple of weeks. And you have given me an idea. And I think one of the things that we might benefit from, and I kind of heard a general interest, is how do we overcome the several years that it took you to get an otherwise legal permit in Coos Bay. I am wondering, sir, if maybe we could call upon you to come back and do a presentation with others. We wouldn't have you be the only person. But I want to hear your suggestions about how we could overcome this regulatory nightmare that we hear constantly from folks.
And I'd be happy to do so, Chair. Many of us have done this before. I've served on a couple of. I chaired a task force under Governor Kitzhaber, as I recall, on improvements to the regulatory system. Mm-hmm. And we came up with discrete recommendations. Mm-hmm. And again, I'll leave you with this thought. I'm happy to do so, and I'd be glad to participate. And because of that background and experience, with some no small measure of frustration, perhaps, but I think I can cut through that, as I mentioned. The message I bring you today was intended to be a positive one, to acknowledge without judgment some of the issues that we have, and we all have. And there is a debate. If we didn't have a transparent system, this state wouldn't be what it is today. I mean, there's a reason for LUBA. There's a reason for appellate processes. There's a reason for all this, including the substantive criteria. And the Court of Appeals is backlogged. That's why it's going to take me. It took me, I don't know, 18 months to get the permit. The review process is twice as long. That's just the way it goes. But the point is, I think today you have the opportunity to do something very positive at the first step. That next level is a tougher nut to crack. There's a lot of perspectives and a lot of interest and a lot of experience, but there are always improvements. And I'm happy to participate in those.
I just want to underscore that I have every reason to believe that your message today was a balanced one. It was received as such, and I think that's why it engendered as many comments and discussion as it did. Mm-hmm. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
I'll take a note of that. But the possible information here. Thank you. And with that, our last two witnesses that are signed up today, Richard Angstrom and Dave Honeycutt, please.
If that's $40 an ounce.
County management, they're going to say. I've got to get my chair and sit on the floor.
Okay, great.
Did you good job? I got a lot done.
Rep. Krieger, gentlemen, could you hold on just for a second here? Would you like an opportunity to vote on the two bills? Or you're excused now.
I'm excused. That's fine.
Okay. All right, sir.
I bet it doesn't make any difference in my election at all.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of the package of bills. And I want to thank the chair for co-sponsoring 3089 and 3090. Steve Pfeiffer mentioned the importance of LUBA. I have to be at LUBA to argue a case here in about half an hour, so I'll be quick. I handed out four handouts. Three of them are charts. The genesis of our participation in this started with an article that I wrote a couple years back that compared Humboldt County, Nevada, with Harney County, Oregon. Humboldt County, Nevada is immediately south of Harney County. They are essentially mirror images of each other. As you can see from the first chart, what we did in the first chart is compare the population of the two counties. You'll see that Humboldt County has approximately 16,000 people. Harney County has about 7,500 people. The size in square miles, these are huge. Harney County and Humboldt County are huge counties. They are bigger than states. Humboldt County has about 9,500 square miles, and Harney County has a little over 10,000 square miles. And then the distance to the nearest metropolitan area is about the same as well. The nearest metropolitan area from Humboldt County's county seat, which is Winnemucca, is Reno. It's about 170 miles away, and the nearest metropolitan area from Burns, which is the county seat in Harney County, is Boise, and that's about 190 miles away. So these are essentially mirror image counties. Geographically, size-wise, population-wise, they're the same thing. Where you get into the differences is when you compare what's going on economically in those two counties. And what you find, and this is the second bar graph, what you'll find, and this was back in 2013, at that point the unemployment rate in Harney County was about 13%. In Humboldt County, immediately to the south, the unemployment rate was about 5%. So a significant difference in the unemployment rate. And the percentage of residents living below the poverty line in Harney County was almost 20%. And in Humboldt County, it was 12%. So Humboldt County was doing significantly better in that aspect as well. And then finally, the third chart shows the difference in median household income, and that is significant as well. In Harney County, the median household income at that point was about $35,000 a year. In Humboldt County, it was $55,000 a year. So a significant difference in the median household income. And the reason for that, there are a variety of reasons, and we can have philosophical debates, but I don't think we ought to on these bills. We can say if you want to come to the Rural Communities Committee, you can have a philosophical debate on land use policy every day in there, and we do. But I don't want to do that on these bills because I don't think it's necessary and I don't think it's helpful to these bills. But one of the reasons why for the distinction is that Humboldt County, they mine in Humboldt County, and we don't mine in Harney County. The mining industry in Humboldt County is a tremendous asset to that county. Its mining in Nevada is the seventh largest industry in Nevada. It contributes 5%, just direct contribution of 5% to the state's economy. The average wage, the average weekly wage for a miner in Nevada, almost $1,700 a week. Imagine if we could have jobs in Harney, Baker, Malheur, Lake counties that paid $1,700 a week. That's you work at some of the industries there, you're lucky to get $1,700 a month. These pay $1,700 a week on average. The industry employed, 93% of the industry employees are covered by health insurance by the industry, employer-paid health insurance. The rural parts of the state where mining occurs, just on the mineral tax alone, and these are all from rural areas. These aren't from urban areas. $240 million to the state of Nevada in mineral tax from those rural areas. And in Humboldt County, again, that's the Northern Nevada company. Five of the 10 highest paying taxpayers in Humboldt County are from the mineral industry. So it's just a tremendous asset. Rich and I, along with Greg Smith, working for Baker County Economic Development, had a mining symposium that we the organizations put on in Baker City in January of this year. Tuesday afternoon in January in Baker City, we put 103 people in a room in Baker City. We had county commissioners there. Representative Bentz was there. Representative Smith was there. Tremendous group. We're doing the same thing in Grants Pass in July or August. We don't have a date set up yet. I hope you can all attend. We're doing the same thing in Burns, and we're trying to set that up for September to let people know the importance that the mineral industry has in parts of the state that really need those jobs. After our conference in Baker City, we got a very nice editorial, and that's the last thing that I handed you from the Baker City Herald, that you know, people have given up. Rich and I have talked to folks in the mineral industry, part of the genesis for this legislation, and we heard the same thing that Steve Pfeiffer talked about. It's not that we even know what the laws are there. There's just a perception that we don't want to come to Oregon. We're hoping that the policy statements, in particular in Section 1 of the bill, the non-fiscal related issues, the policy statements in Section 1 of 3089 and 3090 will serve as a statement for the industry that, you know, if you come here and you follow the rules, we're here, we're open, and we have a product that is available. If you're willing to come here, we'd like to have you. So thank you again, Mr. Chair, for your co-sponsorship on 3089 and 3090. We love all four of these bills and hope they all pass.
Thank you very much. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Chair Witt. Rich Angstrom, President of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. I know Dave's in just a little bit of stress mode because he's got an oral argument.
Yes.
If there's any, maybe we should just do some questions if folks have questions of him.
Okay.
And then just trying to be thoughtful here, for my partner here.
I appreciate that very, very much. Questions or comments?
I just have a comment, and I'll make it really brief. Thank you very much. And let's not forget, in addition to the miners, the professionals that come into these communities, and they bring their spouses with them, and you get more than a living wage. You have high earners. You have great schools. You have good community distribution of funds. So, I mean, it isn't just for miners. You are bringing people from all over to diversify, if you will, these small communities, and it's a great thing, in my opinion. Thanks.
Anything further? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Dave, before you run off here, I suspect you may have, both of you, frankly, may have some stuff that you would like to, if we did do an informational hearing, contribute to in terms of the regulatory burdens that we impose in this state. Think about it. If there's something, a story to be told, let me know, and we may put something together. With that, we appreciate your testimony very, very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have.
Okay.
Yeah. So as Dave goes, Rich Angstrom again from OCAPA. I did want to just thank Dave and who really started this discussion. And kudos to him for really kind of digging in, doing the hard work that led us to this point. So I do want to just say this to begin with. This is just the beginning, one of a series of four types of legislative things that we are noodling on over time. We actually think that the first thing we needed to do was have a decent policy discussion with the department or with the committee about what the mining law and the opportunity should look like. And then some of these other things that have come in that you've been hearing about are actually part and parcel of a series of things that we'll be bringing forward to the committee. So real quick, the symposiums have been a great success. We're looking forward to the next two. Mark Ferns, who was a former Dogami employee, came in and testified. And the first chart that you have in front of you is a series of maps that show the last inventory process on talc, copper, and limestone that the department did. We actually had to stop him because he had multiple examples of inventories that were available because he was just going on and on. And so we can keep the show on the road probably what the chair's trying to do right now. And I stopped him and I asked him one question. Is the inventory process done? And he said, we haven't even scratched the surface in Oregon of what the opportunities are out there. We took that to heart, that there's a lot of work that that could be done. And the chair, Chair Witt, asked just to give some examples. I wanted to do a PowerPoint, but I knew that Representative Benz was going to do his, so I thought I'd do it in this form so you guys could kind of see it. But the other thing that came out, and I want to reiterate this, is we couldn't even get the American Mining Association to participate in the symposiums. And they just don't believe Oregon's open. That is the story. And that's what we're trying to change here. The second thing is the budget issue, and I think that's the big lift here, right? And I just want to say this, is I gave you chart two. It's a series of things that I pulled out of the Dogami budget. And if you look on the program one side, and it's kind of hard to read, you'll see the mapping section in there. There's five or six employees. Those employees used to do this kind of work. We want to have, we're hoping that this committee passes the policy, keeps the opportunities for the Ways and Means folks to look at. But Dave and I want to have that argument in front of the Ways and Means folks about what are the investments in Oregon? Where are we headed? What are the opportunities? What is the direction of this department? Mm-hmm. And that really is, obviously the department's really hurting on the budget side because they're not getting general fund. But we think this is appropriate. Absolutely appropriate expenditure of general fund dollars, and we want the opportunity to fight for those general fund dollars to help the department so as they reinvent themselves, they start going in a direction that's going to create economic opportunity throughout the state. So, I mean, all corners. So that pretty much concludes my testimony, except the hunger that I've noticed here from all of you just through the questions and the interest is amazing. And I would love the opportunity to work on an informational hearing. I'd love to bring in some of the expert geologists like Mark Ferns. And as the session quiets down, Chair, you know, we get down to those weeks where the committees are closed. I would love to work with you and others putting a really nice, discussion point of what are the opportunities, what are the permitting problems, where Oregon should go and start getting this committee thinking about that, because we do have these other packages of bills down the road that you folks are going to be looking at. So with that, Mr. Chair, I conclude my testimony.
Thank you so very, very much. Certainly appreciate that, Rich. I thank you for your offer to participate in an informational hearing. I would never be so brash as to do a self-invitation, but I think we all would be looking forward possibly to an invitation to one of the seminars or symposiums. So,
Mr. Chair, I think the one to do is the one in Burns. We're going to try to set up a tour of the one site that Cliff Benz showed, the EP Mineral site, and then we're going to see if we can work with Alamos, a potential gold site, and go down and do that one too.
Exciting. Anything from the committee members? With that, thank you very much, Rich. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bills 3089, 3090, 3096, 3269, and we, as a committee, stand adjourned. Thank you all very much, committee members, and thank you. Thank you all very much, committee members, and thank you.